Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_bball. We're back with another season preview podcast, getting really, really close to the end here, about four or five to go. So the teams that we're going to be covering, it's narrowed down. Today's one, we're doing the Toronto Raptors, and I am joined by a big Toronto Raptors guy, Russell Peddle of Number Fire, Raptors HQ, and The Stretch Zero. Russell, how are you going?
I'm doing great, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Now, it's a nice early morning for you up there in Canada, so I do appreciate you getting up. And I do believe that you've taken the day off work for a very, very special cause. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, this doesn't get back to my bosses, but I don't. To my knowledge, none of them are fantasy basketball players, so we should be okay. I'm up bright and early, but don't worry, I've got my my Tim Hortons. Like a good Canadian. But no, I have an annual tradition dating back to pretty much my high school days. And again, maybe I'll retroactively get in trouble for that. But I've taken days off for NBA 2K release date or NBA Live when it was NBA Live. I've been playing since the first one and gotten a copy every year, regardless of the system I've had. So yeah, that's a running tradition. And I found out only kind of last minute that comes out on Tuesday, but if you pre-order it, you get it today. So yeah, I'm off today. Now I've got some other stuff to do too. I'd like to pretend that that's the only reason I'm off. But of course, it worked out well too that of course I get to come on here with you this morning. So
beautiful timing. Now back to the NBA Live I was talking about the other day on the podcast. Was that the first ones that you're playing, the ones where they had the diagonal court?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Live 95.
Yeah, exactly. Live 95 with that diagonal court. Ah, yes, great memories there. But we're talking Toronto Raptors, and they're a team that started off really well last season. They were flying early on. Kyle Lowry was on fire. And then things really, really dropped off. The injury to Lowry, now there was injuries to DeMar DeRozan as well, and they fell in a complete hole the second half of the season, and they were embarrassed in the playoffs. What do you think of what they did in the offseason? Because they did make some relatively significant additions, lost some pieces, brought in some guys. As a whole, are they better? Are they better positioned for a deeper playoff push? Are they a better team, win-loss record? How do you see what they did in the offseason?
Well, I would say that in terms of win-loss record, I'd say they'll probably be pretty close to where they were. Just because I don't see their ceiling being that much higher than kind of the 50 wins that they've been hovering around the last 2 years. That said, I think they'll be a better team in general just because they addressed really the weaknesses that were exposed in the first round when they got absolutely embarrassed by the Washington Wizards. The problems on defense, the kind of lack of creativity on offense, especially in late game situations. I think that they've addressed, especially the defensive thing, because everyone that they brought in, you kind of think of, with the exception of Luis Scola, you think of as a defender first.
Yep.
Like if you look at Corey Joseph, Damari Carroll, and Bismack Biyombo, you automatically think of defense. So they address that. That's good. And there's enough offense to go around. So letting a guy like Lou Williams walk probably won't be a big detriment. And same thing with like Grievous Vasquez, these more one way players going on the offensive end. So, I think overall we'll see an improvement, and maybe they can focus their offense a little bit more, instead of, really driving in these bad pull-ups for DeMar DeRozan or Lou Williams. I'm hoping that there'll be more of it'll be more spread out. Maybe they'll put the ball down low to Jonas Valanciunas a bit more. I actually just called him Jonas, which is, I talk about him so much in my day-to-day life, and somehow I messed up his name on someone else's podcast. So, because I'm also on the Raptors HQ podcast, so I say his name like five times a day.
It's early in the morning. Anyway, you're forgiven for that.
Okay, but one thing, just if anyone out there follows me on Twitter, they'll notice that the majority of my Raptors season is spent complaining about not getting JV the ball enough or giving him enough touches. So
it is the most frustrating thing in the NBA to me. It's close. Ronnie Price starting for the Lakers was the number one frustrating thing for me. But the fact of Jonas Valanciunas not getting the ball, not playing minutes, when he played, he was just, look, unbelievably efficient. He is a good player waiting to happen only because of the coach.
Absolutely.
And it is just, it is maddening to me the way that Dwayne Casey has been using him. It's not like that, you know, they'd sit him out and then, oh, look how good the Raptors were in the fourth quarter. Look at all these games they were winning down the stretch. They were losing all these games. They were a 500 team through the last couple of months of the season. It's not like this great strategy of sitting Jonas Valanciunas, you know, throughout the last quarter was yielding, you know, fantastic results. That wasn't making them any different. It was actually making them worse because he was that much, for the guy, other guys who were there, Tyler Hansbrough, Amir Johnson in the front court, none of them can score. Valanciunas is a post up beast. He is just an offensive machine. He improved his block numbers, his defense. He's a great rebounder. He's really efficient with his shooting. It makes zero sense, and it'll probably continue to make zero sense this season. I needed to get that rant off my chest because I'm glad you said that, because I hate it. I absolutely hate what I've been seeing from Dwayne Casey.
I fully agree, and that's a running issue among Raptors fans and commenters and people who write about the team. And it's, you know, you chalk some of it up to indecisiveness on offense, fine, and getting lost in team defense and on rotations from time to time. But you know, I'm a big fan of, like, just throw him to the wolves and let him figure it out. And yeah, he's still young, but I think we've wasted a lot of time that he could have been developing with more minutes and in more high pressure situations and high leverage situations. And so, you know, the idea of you know, benching him because he's younger and going with the older guys, I think, is really a detriment to his career arc. And I'm hoping that having given him the cash and letting some of the guys walk a bit more on off, like some of the free agents that were more offensive minded players go, or trading them, and then, you know, bringing in more defensive minded guys. I hope that part of that has to do with the idea of, okay, we're going to give more touches to JV now. And if that's not coming from Casey, then maybe management will start pushing it.
Well, they're going to push that, or they're going to push Casey out the door. One of those two things has to happen, because he's by far and away the best big man on this team offensively. And Amir Johnson out of there, there's, you know, Patrick Patterson can be nice, but he's not Valanciunas. And they did extend him on a real bargain of a contract as well. So they're going to be invested in him and getting the most out of him they can for that really small amount of money that they had to invest in him. Mm-hmm. You've covered all the additions of the team: Damari, Luis Scola, Bismack Biyombo, Corey Joseph. What do you think of Carroll? What do you think of the contract that he signed? How do you think he fits in on this team? Is he going to play stretch four? Is he going to play mainly at the three? How do you see him fitting in? And what does it do for his fantasy value? Does it go up? Does it go down on this new team? How do you see that move of Damari Carroll joining Toronto?
I was a big fan. Like when all the rumors started, you know, came around July 1st, it seemed like, you know, the Raptors were in on LaMarcus Aldridge and things like that. And, you know, people in Canada and the follow the Raptors are not used to seeing the team linked to big free agents.
Yep.
So that was fun and all. But honestly, I prefer that the fact that we spent some money. And it seems like a lot for a role player, quote unquote. Now, I don't like calling him that, but, like, you know, the general public might not see him as a big name star. But I think he was a fantastic addition to the team. He'll immediately fit into a role that we've been trying to force down Terrence Ross's throat for a couple of years, to little success. So, you know, he comes in right away and is the 3-and-D guy that they've wanted Terrence Ross to be. So right away, I think that he fits the role perfectly. I think he'll make an impact right away. He might even, like, I think with the contract and with the expectation, I think expectations, he'll be a little higher on the totem pole than he was in Atlanta, where there he was more, you know, maybe fourth, sometimes even fifth if you consider Korver, in terms of usage and getting the rock. So I think at Toronto he'll be called on a little bit more, and I see his fantasy value. First of all, like, he's one of those guys that, you know, if you play in leagues with people who are looking for names or who don't like to grab guys with low scoring averages, he's one of those guys that can get you a lot of value in other places. And it's a subtle way, kind of like, you know, your Middletons or even your Kawhi Leonard. Like, people look at him as a first round guy and they're almost, like, afraid of him because he doesn't score 20 points a game. Well, yep. Damari Carroll's kind of fits that mold too, right? Like, he'll get you those threes. He'll get you really good steals,
nice good field goal percentage for the position.
Yeah, definitely good rebounds for the position. Not too bad in assists or blocks or free throw percentage for the position either. And you know, if you play in a nine cat league, those super low turnovers are a major bonus for someone who plays so many minutes. So I just see him taking what he did last year. And I mean, in nine cat, he was almost a top 50 finisher the last 2 years. And, you know, I figure he'll end up a little higher in that because he'll have more on his shoulders. He'll be asked to do more. And so I think right now he's going at like 60 in Yahoo. That's his O rank anyway. Yeah. So
ADP's about 68.
Oh, 68. He's gonna blow that away, in my opinion. Okay. Like I don't see why he wouldn't. He's got the tools, and he's gonna have more opportunity. And I really like the signing from a general basketball standpoint, but I also like it from a standpoint that as a fantasy owner, I'm gonna snipe him from some people for sure.
Are you at all worried about the fact that he's transitioning from an Atlanta offense where there was a lot of ball movement and a lot of sort of equal contributions from so many players to a Toronto team that was dominated by DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, you know, dribbling the ball and hoisting shots? Are you worried about the change in ball movement heading to Toronto affecting his game? Or do you think that's inconsequential?
I would say that could definitely be a concern. And, you know, we talked about being frustrated by Casey, and maybe it ends up continuing to be that way, and maybe he does lose a bit of value there. But I think his signing signaled the desire to change and to get more movement. Like a big thing that came out last year, the specifics of which aren't clear, but there was a bit of conflict on the team. And I think it had to do with touches, and it had to do with like the way people were sharing the ball and things like that, a little internal chemistry problem. And I think bringing in a guy like Carroll kind of signals that, you know, coming from that Atlanta offense where he can kind of bring some of those ideals to the Raptors, maybe that's where they're headed, and maybe that's what they want to start doing now. And of course, they got a Kalamian, the assistant for the Thunder, to kind of like, I think the idea is to bring in, I was talking about this on Raptors HQ, and my colleague mentioned that like he'll bring in more of a spread offense and things like that. So maybe I feel like if they could fall into old habits, and he could lose some value that way. But I think the signing him and giving him that much money must signal that you're going to find ways to utilize him to his strengths.
Before we can, you know, speak about half an hour on DeMar Carroll, he was awesome in the playoffs last year. He had a big streak of about 20 points a game. He's probably not going to be that guy, but he showed that if he's given extra opportunity and extra responsibility, he actually can score and be more of a go-to scorer. So there's that. And you mentioned earlier, nine cat leagues, he gets a real boost because his turnovers are super low. So that's something to pay attention to. What did you think of the signing of Corey Joseph?
Well, as a Canadian, you know, they're boosting the whole Canada's team, We the North, to sign a Canadian player and have him wear number, and he picked number six, which, you know, it's a little cheesy, but that's kind of, people call Toronto the six because of Drake. So it's this whole thing, like as far as media and promotion goes, great signing. Also great signing in the sense that, you know, Joseph has been a solid player for the Spurs in the small doses, right? Like, he's one of those players that you can see as still a young, very young kid, right? Like barely turned 24. Yep. But there's a lot that he can do if given the opportunity. And now he's going to have a bit more of an opportunity. Like he topped out last year, was the most minutes he ever averaged with the Spurs, and that was 18 or so. He'll probably get a few more than that now because he'll be stepping in to kind of take over some touches from like Grievous Vasquez and Lou Williams, who, you know, got a fair number of touches last year for that second unit. So I like the signing from a basketball standpoint, in the sense that he's a hard-nosed defender. He'll pressure full court, but he's also got, you know, fairly decent skills when it comes to being an efficient scorer, you know, passing the ball relatively well. I think he'll be an interesting player. We'll see how he develops in a bigger role, because he'll obviously have a bigger role now that he's not like behind Tony Parker and like all their two guards and Patty Mills and all that. Like I see him coming in and not only backing up Lowry at the point guard position, but I think they'll do a little bit of two point guard lineups like they tried to do with Grievous at times, but they lost a bit on defense because of it, but you know, they won't give up as much on defense this time. And it really does a lot for Kyle Lowry, and I'm sure we'll speak about him in a minute in one of the other segments. But the you know, I think the idea is that he can spell Lowry a bit more, and that Lowry can perhaps have be a bit more durable this season and make it a bit further, because he'll have a little bit of the pressure off, because it, whether it be on defense if he's paired up with Corey Joseph, or whether it be, like, you know, maybe sitting, not playing quite so many minutes because Corey Joseph will come in and spell him. Now, there's still a lot to see if Joseph can excel with the extra minutes and with the extra, the added pressure of, you know, playing at home, and home being Canada at large, not necessarily like Toronto. But yeah, I think it's a, I think it was a good signing. And I mean, he is from Toronto. I said that, but then I remembered he is actually a straight up Toronto born player.
He is.
Yeah, but you know what? It'll be fun. You know, you're going to see a lot of people wearing Corey Joseph jerseys. He's going to be a fan favorite, and
so he's that popular.
You know, oh, absolutely! Like, okay. The whole, there's a big rise in the whole Team Canada thing from the FIBA Americas. Yep. Like, a lot of Canadian players, like, people here are following the game a bit more, and they're starting to get behind the national team, which is something you've never seen before. Because now we've got, you know, Andrew Wiggins playing there, and, you know, recognizable names. The Team Canada has the most NBA players outside of Team USA at the moment. So it's one of those things where people are paying more attention. It's getting more time on national TV. So I think that he has a chance to be a real, like, local hero.
And the good thing about Corey Joseph from a fantasy point of view is if he gets minutes, he's a really good rebounder. Like, he can be a 5-rebound, 5-assist sort of guy in big minutes. Doesn't hit threes very well, but he's a really high field goal percentage sort of player. Decent free throws. He can have fantasy value, and especially in sort of a daily fantasy format, if, you know, that he gets a spot start and Lowry sits out and he gets a start, you know that he's going to put up, you know, pretty aggressive numbers with his rebound, his assists, the steals, the percentages, which don't necessarily count a huge amount for daily fantasy, but subbing him in, you know you're going to get value from him.
Absolutely.
Let's talk some of the younger guys now. In the draft this year, Delon Wright was picked in the first round, which I really like the pick, and then the signing of Corey Joseph sort of made his role much more reduced for this season. They got Norman Powell in the second round, who I really liked. I liked him before the draft. I liked what I saw from him in summer league. What do you make of those two guys? What do you think of Wright? I thought that Wright had a real chance to play some decent minutes this year, playing that Corey Joseph role, but he's going to be pushed down to that third point guard position now. Are you excited about the pick? What do you make of that selection?
Well, I like the pick. In that I like Delon Wright, but I think this year, with now the D-League affiliate, like Toronto having an exclusive affiliate, I think you're going to see guys like, well, of course, like Bruno and those other guys that were, and Bebe, and especially Powell, and now Wright maybe less so, because like you said, he's going to play that third point guard role, and will probably stay with the big league club, you know, off and on quite a bit.
Yep.
But, you know, you're going to see them use the D-League affiliate a lot. And I think that, you know, you can see something similar to what the Spurs and the Thunder have been doing in recent years, like have them sit on the bench for a few games, send them down for a night, play a game, bring them back, things like that. So I'd say, like, Delon Wright will get some playing time this year and will probably make a decent impact. But, you know, I think, like you said, the signing of Corey Joseph is going to put him down the depth chart a bit, and he might not have as much of an impact. Now, originally, when they traded Grievous, I believe it was actually directly on draft night, or yeah, maybe the day before.
No, it was during the draft.
It was during the draft, yeah. So they traded Grievous, and then they picked Wright, and right away it was like, okay, so he's the backup point guard now, so let's see what he can do. You know, as far as college players go, I'm not really well versed, I would say. So I can't make a definitive projection for him. But from what I've seen and what I've read since he was picked, I think he's going to be a, you know, an interesting piece. We'll see how he develops and what happens. But you know, I honestly think that his best contributions this year will be like the opportunity to go down to the D League a couple times and maybe like really. Show off his stuff there. The thing was, is that the time of the pick, I remember being more, but that besides the fact that they just traded Grievous and I knew that they would need a point guard, I was really set on Bobby Portis was still on the board when they picked, and he went two picks later to Chicago. I saw him as a good guy that you could, you know, develop there at that four spot to, you know, if you don't really become satisfied with Patrick Patterson as your four going forward. And obviously Luis Scola is there to fill a role on the bench. You know, maybe he could turn into something, but you know, instead he's gone to Chicago's ultra crowded front court anyway.
Yeah, see, I was the other way around. I'm a Chicago fan and I was hoping that the Bulls would get DeLon Wright, who got, you know, picked two, three spots ahead. So I wanted Wright to head to Chicago to be that backup, you know, behind Rose and play some minutes behind Jimmy Butler as well. So look, straight up trade. We'll do it. Porters for Wright.
yeah, absolutely. We'll call up Masai and get it cleared, but yeah, sure.
I'm happy with that. I think that's a good result for both teams. I really like what Wright can do. I think he's going to be a really aggressive steals guy. If he gets minutes, I think he's going to be a good defender. He's going to be similar to Corey Joseph, and those guys have value. Those guys who get similar rebounds and assist numbers. Marcus Smart's a player who does it. Victor Oladipo's a player who does it. Guys who can go you know, as a ceiling 25-5 at some point in their career. Like DeLon Wright's not going to be at that for a couple of years, but he's a really good rebounder. He's a good steals guy. He's a good assist player. Really good, you know, per 36 block numbers we've got him looking at for this season. Good free throw shooter. If for some reason he gets minutes at some point, he's going to be a really good fantasy contributor. It's not going to be for a few years, you'd think at least, but you're in deep dynasty leagues and you're able to stash guys. I really like what DeLon Wright's going to be able to do from a fantasy point of view. Look, it might not ever happen, but his game does translate to that sort of thing and putting up those pretty decent numbers. Yeah, okay threes, just really nice all-round contribution. So I do like what DeLon Wright can do. Norman Powell's the other guy who was really impressive in summer league. Now, he's probably got a little bit of an easier run to minutes because, you know, Terrence Ross is the backup on the wing, has hardly been inspiring. They lost Lou Williams. I heard some whispers that people talking about, you know, DeMar DeRozan trades during the season. I don't necessarily see it happening, but if that happens, then there's a ton of minutes opening up on the wing. And Powell could be one of those. There's always one guy, always a second round draft pick who gets minutes when you're not anticipating it. There's no reason it couldn't be Norman Powell if things break that way. And if he does play, I think he's going to be a very interesting player. Again, he's a good defender. He's a good scorer. He's a highlight machine as well, which that doesn't count much for fantasy, but he's fun to watch. He can hit some threes. I think there was a steal when they got him in the second round. What do you make of Powell?
Pretty much everything you said. I'm really happy that the Raptors took him in the second round. He really, like you said, he tore up summer league. It was very impressive. It's one of those things where, again, I think thinking about him on the big league club is just kind of a not yet thing. I think the team is properly building, like picking these players that are good and that, you know, they can really push their like I said before, their D league affiliate, the Raptors 905, which is a name I absolutely despise, by the way.
it's not a good name.
All this area code stuff has got to stop. Like, you know, props to Drake for being our ambassador and all, but pushing all these associations with Toronto, with the six and with the, you know, the 905 over in Mississauga. Anyway, it's driving me nuts. but I digress. yeah, he's an exciting player and he's going to be a lot of fun. I don't think he's necessarily going, like you said, he's got an easier, path to minutes, based on his position. And he'll probably play more. He'll probably actually get on the floor for more games than Wright, but you know, maybe fewer minutes per game, but you know, kind of filling that, and I hate to say this, but maybe like kind of filling the Landry Fields role a bit more, he's kind of coming in from time to time. And no, but I, at the moment, the opportunity is just not there. I mean, I think the talk of DeMar DeRozan trades are overblown. The idea of them waiting on an extension is just best for both sides. Like give DeRozan a chance to see what he can do for, you know, completely healthy as a first season, and regardless, him waiting, you can get more money. So if they decide to, like, I don't know, him being a max player is a completely other debate, but I mean, it's good to, like you said, things could break right, either whether there's a trade or a big injury, and maybe Powell or Wright get an opportunity. They're both decent dynasty stashes, like you said.
Definitely.
I wouldn't build a team around them, but if I've got a late round flyer, I think both of them. The idea, I think, is Masai wants to build, you know, he's kept some guys around that were there from Colangelo's time. But I think he really wants to build something a bit more organically. And I think he likes the idea of bringing guys up in the Raptor system, hence why the push for the affiliate. So I think that those two, you know, in a few years they get their opportunity, they've got the tools to be useful fantasy assets a little down the road.
Definitely, the D League thing I think is key for all teams, and I can't wait for all teams to have a D League affiliate. I think it's fantastic to see these guys grow in that system. It's a really big thing I think for teams to have that. Let's talk about the internet's, I don't know, probably not the internet's most favorite boyfriend, but he's pretty high up there. Bruno Caboclo. We saw him for 8 games last year, a total of 23 minutes. Not a huge amount of exposure. He looked a different player in Summer League. And again, it's Summer League, so you always throw that caveat out there. But he looked different. He looked like he was more, have an idea of what position he needed to be in. He's not going to contribute this season, I don't think, unless you might see it a different way, but I don't think that Bruno's contributing this season. But down the track, I think there's still obviously hope for him to do something. He can be a guy, he's going to be a 3-and-D sort of player, I think, some rebounding, you know, not high scoring, a block sort of player, you know, maybe a steal, over steal a game, a block a game, a three a game, that sort of threat. Lowish scoring, nice rebounds, maybe like, even similar to a Damari Carroll type of role, like a low scoring guy, but contributing in lots of other categories. What do you think of Caboclo? Do you see him getting any sort of playing time this year? It should be up marginally from last year, but not a huge amount.
I feel like I'm a spokesperson for the D League affiliate. I'll go back to that point again. I think it's almost like we got a D League team to feature him because he's a fan favorite. The crowd goes nuts when he comes in. People are cheering for him in blowouts. You know, that victory cigar to come in and play. He's a lot of fun. And like you said, he's got a very interesting skill set as a potential 3-and-D guy, down the road. He's still, what is it? He's now 1 year away from being 2 years away.
That's it. We're whittling them down slowly.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I don't see him carving out a role much bigger this year than what he had last year. But like I said, we'll hear lots of stories about him because I think he'll carve up the D League a bit, kind of like he did. He looked good in Summer League. He'll look good in the D League. He's not ready to face NBA talent yet, but I mean, he was very raw when he was, you know, he was a surprising pick when he was taken 20th last year. And, you know, the word used to describe him the most is raw. So, you know, he's still got some work to do, but he'll be an interesting player somewhere down the road. And again, if you're talking dynasty picks, you know, I was in a dynasty, I was advising out a dynasty draft a couple weeks ago. And I really, really felt like saying on like one of those last picks to be like, let's just grab Bruno, see what happens.
Who's the best potential out of those three guys, Bruno, Norman, and DeLon?
I honestly think Bruno. And I think I might be biased just because he's such a fan favorite, but I think he's got as a you know, 3-and-D small forward, he's got something that's very coveted, but there aren't a lot of players that really do it well. So if he can develop into that, I think just based on, you know, scarcity of value at his position from a fantasy standpoint, I think there's a chance that he could really hit. Whereas like, I guess you could say the same for Powell, but I believe in Bruno or DeLon to hit a little bit more than Powell right now.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think that Wright's probably the slightly better prospect, but I am big on Caboclo as well. I think that he can be a really interesting guy. We see he's got that insane length, which can help with so many areas, especially his defense and those steals and block numbers. That's going to be a real key for him in that area. Absolutely. once he develops and understands all his positioning and all that sort of stuff. What about a breakout player?
Like a Giannis Antetokounmpo light.
Definitely. Sort. Yeah, not quite as tall, not quite as long, but yeah, similar proportions, I guess, is probably the best way of putting that. And he's obviously got a long way to go, but yeah, that'll come, hopefully. What about a breakout player, Russell? Who's your guy that you think is going to take the big step this season? The guy I've got down here is Jonas Valanciunas. We spoke about him a little bit earlier. I'm excited to see what he can do. As I said, he took his game to another level, not quite the level we wanted it to go to last season, but he definitely improved. He got those blocks up over one a game, which for a fantasy point of view, we really like because he was down below one the season before. You know, 57% from the field and 79% from the free throw line is fantastic. 12 points, 8.7 rebounds. Yeah, they're really good numbers. I think he takes another step up with those this year. The scoring should go up. You know, keep those blocks steady. The really good percentages. I really like him as a breakout candidate. Do you have somebody else that you like for that sort of thing, or is it Jonas for you?
Nope, it's Jonas for me as well. Yep. That's exactly what I've written down. and for a lot of the reasons you said, and like we spoke about earlier, I think, you know, the days he played 26 minutes per game last year, and I really don't understand with the way they've kind of thinned out up front, so to speak, or like, you know, they're clearly a team that's recognizing the small ball trend and is not worrying about having too many pure centers that can't, you know, that can't run. So the idea of him playing 26 minutes, I feel like that has to be over. Like he has to top 30 from here on out. He absolutely has to. Yeah. And, you know, last season in 9-cat, he was up to 61 overall in just 26 minutes. And it's one of those things where, like you said, the rebounding is solid, the blocks, the field goal percentage, the free throw percentage, like just both a center that shoots both percentages so high is just such a, like apart from Brook Lopez, you're not getting that, or the two Lopez brothers, even you're not getting that in many places.
Yep.
And, you know, low turnovers. You know, if he just adds a little bit more scoring and get the ball goes through him a little bit more, he has the potential to be a real, you know, right now in Yahoo is O rank is 74. And, I see him outplaying that easily. Like he was, like I said, he was 60th overall last year. You imagine with a new contract, a year older, they're going to play him more. You know, top 50 is, there's a very good chance because as you said before, he's a really efficient player on both ends of the floor. Like he makes mistakes and those are glaring and, you know, he pump fakes a little too much and on offense and things like that. But when it comes to being efficient, like you put him in a post up, he's one of the most efficient post up guys you can get. He's scoring over a point of possession on post ups, which is really good. I mean, it's like almost 90th percentile.
Yep.
You put him in pick and rolls. They didn't do it a lot, but when you did, he still scored like, you know, 1.1 points per possession roughly, which is good enough for about 80th percentile. You know, he protects the rim fairly well. Like you're mentioning his blocks. We don't think of him necessarily as a good rim protector, but you know, allowing 46.5% at the rim, you know, you're looking at like Dwight Howard, Andre Drummond as comparables when it comes to that percentage allowed within 5 feet. So the tools are there and you just got to give him time. And so yeah, I like him as a breakout player and I've probably named him as such for 3 years running now, but this so year I swear I'm going to be right. It's one of those things where you know, I was saying that last year and it was, you know, it worked fairly well because, like I said, he finished fairly well on a per minute basis. But at the end of the day, he wasn't getting that volume that people wanted, and so it wasn't quite the breakout I projected. But I'm gonna stick with it this year until it happens, basically, because eventually I'm gonna be right and take credit for telling people that they should draft him as a sleeper. And I mean, a sleeper in the mid rounds, you know what I mean? But like, he's someone who I would gladly take in the fourth I think you can wait a little bit and still get him.
Definitely.
But I'm taking him in the fifth. I mean, I got no problem with that. I think he'll hit the top 50 fairly easily. And if he's going at 74, like, I don't know what his average draft position is right now. Do you have that up?
It's 75.
75. Yeah. I mean, gee whiz. I'm going to, yeah, give me that all day. I'm going to, for sure. I don't mind, going in on him there.
And look, I agree. I think I've been on him for the last two seasons as a sleeper as well, as a guy who's going to have a breakout. It hasn't quite come, but it hasn't been his fault. As I said, it's not his fault. The numbers he's putting up, he's showed great improvement. His per 36 numbers last season are really impressive. And you know, sometimes per 36 numbers don't mean a lot, but when you're only playing 26 minutes, when you extrapolate it out to what a decent player or a normal player is playing, he's at 16.5 points, 12 rebounds, 1.6 blocks. Like they're really good numbers.
That's insane.
That's top 35, top 30 potential. He probably doesn't get there because he doesn't play 36 minutes.
But 30, no, and
30,
he won't.
33 minutes should be where he's aiming. And I've got him projected at 30 minutes at the moment because I don't trust Casey to actually go full in and go, let's play him the minutes that he deserves. And it's going to be maddening to not see him out there for, you know, what he, because who else is getting minutes? You know, Bebe Nguera, Bismack Biyombo. Like these guys are okay in small spurts. But I mean small spurts like 8 minutes, 10 minutes. That's it. Like they're not absolutely guys who should be getting 20 minutes a game. Patrick Patterson shouldn't be playing center at all. It should be Valanciunas just anchor. Yeah, even him. Like, you talk about, if you're going to sit Valanciunas for bad defense, then you can't put Scholar there in his place.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, that was the point I was going to make. He will play a few minutes there, but he's also going to be the primary backup to Patterson, who's not used to playing 36 minutes either. So like, to your point, I don't see any eventuality where they don't have to play Valanciunas, like, you know, 32 minutes a game, hopefully. Like, that's my hopeful projection.
Yep.
Like, and I think that's reasonable. And I don't see the way that they don't. I don't understand how the rotation works that they don't put him in like that. And as I was saying, like, I'm looking now at a Roto-World mock we did, recently, and, that you were part of as well. And I got him in the sixth round with the 62nd pick. And I love that. I love that to death. I would have taken him a bit earlier. Like, he was going around guys like Robin Lopez, Tyson Chandler, and just the upside.
No, but
and
he's only clearly better than those guys.
Exactly. So I like that. I actually got him in the Roto-World auction too, to seem like a complete homer, but, it was for $10. And if you're going auction drafts, you can get Jonas Valanciunas for $10. I think you're going to get a major return on your investment. So
don't worry about feeling like a homer. We did a deep dynasty draft on the weekend. And Greg Taves is one of the listeners to the podcast, and he's a Raptors guy from Toronto. He drafted six Raptors, I think, on his team. Now it's a deep,
wow,
deep league. It was 400 players, but I think he had Valanciunas, Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
He had Powell and Wright, definitely. He had two others. Yeah. I'm going to look this up because he just kept getting every single Raptors player. It was, he goes, I swear I'm not mean to get all these guys. And I'm, yeah, no worries, mate. Every Raptors player that went up, he was bitten. Got a lot of them for a dollar, so it ended up being a pretty decent value. But so don't ever think that you're a Raptors homer when someone's out there grabbing six of them in one league and got basically their whole bench. I'm going to bring this up while we're talking if I can find his team.
Absolutely. I do end up with Jonas while you're doing that. I got to say, I do end up with a lot of mock drafts I've done for the, like, either with Roto World, the Fantasy Fix, or just, you know, going into the Yahoo draft rooms and doing mocks. I end up with Jonas and Damari Carroll a lot. And, you know, it comes off as a homer pick, but at the same time, it's also a smart fantasy player pick because it's, you know, those guys are going to have overplayed where they're being drafted. And honestly, the Raptors in general, when you look at their ranks on ESPN and Yahoo and the average draft position they're going for, a lot of them project to outplay their ADP. And I don't know what that is or what's causing that, but I wouldn't be surprised if I end up with Raptors in a good number of my drafts too.
This is what's happened, you know, is the big teams get overvalued. I've been doing these preview podcasts and looking at all the teams. Lakers guys are going 20 spots too high. Knicks guys are going too high. Bulls guys are going, you're right on, or maybe a little bit too high. Where guys like the Utah players are significantly undervalued. The Toronto guys are, you know, 10 spots, 20 spots undervalued. I brought up Greg's team here. This is who he drafted in his team. So he's got Jonas Valanciunas, Damari Carroll, Terrence Ross, Norman Powell, DeLon Wright, and then to throw it in, he drafted Trey Lyles, who's not from the Raptors, but he's a Canadian. So just another guy to add into his team. So he's gone full Canada in that team. And so yeah, don't feel like you're being a homer. If anyone thinks they're a homer for drafting guys, just remember Greg, who's drafted five guys from his home team and another guy from the country. Do you have anyone? The sleep I had down was Valanciunas as well. So I think that's tremendous value. That's probably the best value pick you can get. Like, I think he's going to be a great player, but that's also the best value player. Do you think there's another real sleeper sitting on this team?
I originally would have put Valanciunas there as well, but to switch it up, I put down Patrick Patterson.
Okay.
I think that going into he's a pretty good per minute performer. Like, even last season with you know, with that bench role, he was still a top 100 play in non-cat leagues because of the low turnovers, the ultra low turnovers.
Very, very low turnovers.
Basically doesn't turn the ball over because he doesn't really pass that much.
He's at 0.7, which is just ridiculously low.
Oh, wait, no, sorry, I misspoke. He does pass quite a bit. He has got two assists a game at 26 minutes. Isn't bad for his position.
So that's a good assist to turnover ratio then.
Very good, yeah. So, you know, he does a little bit of everything. He doesn't score a lot, but, you know, he gives you the good threes and rebounding. And I think with more minutes and a bigger role this year, you're going to get that. And, you know, he's going after pick 100, right? I think he's 120-ish, 120, maybe, I would say.
Yep, 124.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, I'll take him there all day because I think that the expanded role will give you those threes and rebounds. And, of course, threes from a power forward center position is a rare commodity. And the low turnovers helps. He's good in both percentages. He gets you a spare block, a spare steal here and there. I think that, you know, he's one of those players where if you're – he wasn't owned on a lot of teams last year, but if you sorted by rank, he always kind of was sitting there in the top 100 with a very subtle stat line.
Yeah, definitely. And the high threes and the good free throw percentage that people ignore as well is something that he offers as a power forward, when not many guys do that. If you have a team that's built and you need to really solidify your threes and free throws and you're looking for a big man, there weren't many guys better than Patrick Patterson. He doesn't get many rebounds. He's only got 5 a game last season. It's okay, but it's not great. But when he's adding that high free throw percentage. Yeah, look, exactly. And then he's adding the high threes and the high free throws. He definitely has some value. And he's going to start over Luis Scola. He's going to play more minutes than last season. He might not play big minutes, but he's going to play more minutes than last season. I think he's a really interesting choice there as well. And I think that he should be drafted in basically every standard league when you guys are drafting. What about the other side of things?
Yeah, yeah.
Russell, do you think there's anyone that's overvalued who you're probably going to be avoiding?
Well, no, in the sense, like what I said before about the fact that, and as the point that you made as well, that people are undervaluing teams like the Raptors and the Jazz while overvaluing like the Lakers and the Knicks and things like that. I kind of see the same thing going on here, with the reverse happening with the Raptors. And there are very few players on the team that I don't like at their position. Now, Kyle Lowry up at 22 makes me a little scared just because of the way that he wore down last year. And the fact that, you know, maybe the goal this year is to get him to play a little bit less and have a little bit less of a load to carry. But then at the same time, you know, hashtag muscle watch, he's showing up in pictures with his shirt off all summer with, to show that he's really, you know, taking his diet seriously and is trimmed down, and hopefully the conditioning will be a bit better. So, it's one of those things where I think up in that 22 range where it is now in Yahoo, that's his O rank. I find like he's good as that first point guard that's, you know, in that tier with, say, like Mike Conley that comes after the elite ones, right? Like comes after the Stephs, the Damian Lillards, the John Walls, all those. I don't mind it, but it's a little bit rich for my blood, but that's really just picking one for the sake of picking one. If I end up with him in that range, If he's sitting there, I don't mind it either, just because he brings so much to the table from a fantasy perspective in terms of scoring, threes, great rebounds for the position, assists, steals, great free throw percentage, not terrible, terrible, terrible in turnovers. And, you know, obviously doesn't give you many blocks, but he has in the past had, you know, gotten not so much last season, but in seasons prior, he gets those surprise blocks or a game where he might get one or two. And, you know, his field goal percentage leaves a bit to be desired. Fine. But, you know, he's just such a positive in a couple areas like threes and assists and rebounds from the position that, I still like him. I'm not saying to shy away from him necessarily, but 22 might be a little tiny bit on the rich side for me.
Yeah, it's marginally, but I think that he's got top 20 potential. I think that, like, say, like a guy like Mike Conley, who you might get 10 spots later, he doesn't have top 20 potential. Kyle Lowry's got top 20 potential. Now, he really struggled. He was on fire when DeMar DeRozan was out. He was also playing a ton of minutes, and that would have contributed to his wear down over the second half of the season when he just shot the ball horribly. The last 3 months of the season, he only shot 38% from the field, and that's just not good enough. But early on, he was on fire. He was putting up really big numbers. He was a clear top 15, top 20 player and dropped off.
Absolutely.
And he had that injury, that back problem that was a real weird sort of scenario, and that kept him out towards the end of the year. He was able to put up, you know, really good numbers early on. I think that he might be a bit of a surprise player, but it is hard to invest in him in the second round. I'm happy grabbing him in the third round. I think that's a nice spot to get him. But if you have to pull the trigger before pick 24, I think that's probably a little bit risky, even though I do think he's got top 20 upside.
Absolutely. Like, I would take him over, like, some other guys in that range. Like, I would take him over Paul George, fine, but I'm kind of shying away from him entirely anyway.
Yeah, so am I.
But there are just guys in that range that are too... Like, I trust more to hit. I think just because of that, seeing Lowry wear down a bit last year, that comes with that risk. Yeah, he's got that top 15, 20 upside, but it's just you worry about him breaking down not only as he gets a bit older, but as the team kind of is building in a way that maybe they'll move away from him a little bit. So, you know, in that range, if I've got a chance to take, you know, a Rudy Gobert or if a Serge Ibaka has fallen, like, I don't see myself taking Lowry. So that's why I think if people are following the rankings in the draft applet, I think that it's just going to end up that I'm not going to end up with him in many places. But
he's also one of those guys. You know, people draft. He has a tendency to slide as well. That some people you'll get in some leagues absolutely. Where people just don't like him, and then he will slide. Then you might find him sitting there at 30, and then pick 30. It's fantastic value.
Absolutely, yeah. So if you play in a league with people that aren't from Canada. Yeah, exactly. Here he always goes early.
Exactly. We don't have that problem down here in Australia because none of our guys are really good enough to warrant high picks. You know, people aren't really reaching on Andrew Bogut or Paddy Mills or anything like that. I imagine that maybe next season when Ben Simmons gets drafted, he's going to be going about 20 spots higher mm-hmm. down here than what he does over there. But we don't have that problem just yet. Something might start happening soon. The guy I had down as maybe a little bit overrated in terms of his fantasy value is Corey Joseph, a guy we spoke about earlier. He's currently being drafted at pick,
yeah, 100, I like that pick.
141. I don't know why you're drafting him in a standard league. He's a clear backup. He's not getting more than 22 minutes a game. Yeah, he'll have value if something happens to Lowry, but you don't draft handcuffs in fantasy basketball. Yeah, it's impossible. Not. You can't do it. There's no point in picking that high. I've got him ranked just outside the top 200 in my rankings. There's no need for to pick Corey Joseph at pick 140, unless that's a whole stack of Canadians influencing the ADP of these guys early on. But no, Corey Joseph, a little bit too early for me. What about a guy that you think is limited by his playing time? So he would really excel in a perfect situation. Now, we've covered Jonas Valanciunas and he got 30 minutes. He's a top 30 type of player. But is there someone else on this roster that, you know, given a starter's role in big minutes, would become a must-add guy for fantasy people?
Now, this is there's a good chance that I'll be posting this podcast on Raptors HQ in a post. If there's one thing in the whole thing that will get our commenters
you pick the same guy as me. I hope you have.
It'll be my mention of James Johnson.
Yes. Yes.
Because, wow, is that something that Raptors fans and players like to talk about? Is, again, while we're piling on Casey for not playing Valanciunas enough, the lack of James Johnson in last year's playoffs in a situation where, oh my God, I couldn't create a better player to come in and fill a need that they had at that point than James Johnson. And he's a permanent beast. And he was like that in Memphis. And when he got a little bit of playing time, he excelled he's been doing it the whole time. But I mean, he really emerged when he was, I remember, the year that he was in that time when he was in Memphis.
It was crazy in Memphis at that time.
He would show up and people would be like all of a sudden like running to their waiver wires to get him when he got an opportunity. And it was the same thing this year in Toronto. Like, he didn't have steady ownership, but every time that he got an opportunity or got when he got put into the starting lineup for a bit, people were just running to the waiver wire because the guy gives you a little bit of everything from the position. And, you know, his per 36 numbers for last season. Now, he's only playing like less than 20 minutes a game and he played in 70 games, but you know, per 36, you're looking at 14.6 points, 6.8 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.4 steals, 1.8 blocks. Like, you know, think about now. Obviously, he's not going to play 36 minutes, but then he's shooting it. His shooting percentage is up to near 60%, and he barely turns the ball over. So his free throw percentage is a bit iffy. But I mean, that and the threes, you aren't getting much, but everywhere else you are.
But steals and blocks are so valuable.
So valuable. And it's one of those things where now with Damari Carroll in front of him, obviously that's not going to happen. But there was a big outcry last year for being like, you know, why are we trying to make Terrence Ross happen when he's not clearly not ready? Maybe he never will be. I don't want to I don't want to say the kid will never be good. He's still very young, but he hasn't been cutting it. And James Johnson is one of those guys where, you know, if you're a guy that follows the numbers, he's just so ultra efficient and he pops up in so many, like if you filter leaderboards of points per possession on different types of things on offense, or if you're looking at defensive metrics and stuff like that, he just keeps popping up to the top of the list, near the top of the list, even though he plays in limited minutes, because on a permanent basis, he's just so effective on both ends. And he's one of those guys that, you know, now that we've got Damari Carroll, I feel like he's not going to get his opportunity with this team. And it's a shame because I think he could have been really fun as a fantasy player if he had a solidified role in like the starting lineup. He would be the guy I would mention as a sleeper if I knew that he was going to get that path to minutes.
This is something I always say, Russell, is that if someone has done something before, you know they can do it. Like, we can go out there and project, oh yeah, Giannis has worked on his 3-point shooting. He's going to shoot one a game. Anthony Davis is hitting threes. He's going to shoot 0.7 a game. But we've never seen them do it. right? So it's hard to project that sort of stuff. We've seen James Johnson put up big games. Now, you can't project him for that all the time, but he had two games last year where he had four steals and four blocks in the same game. He did it twice. He also had he had another separate game where he got four blocks and another separate game where he got four steals. Like, these are crazy, crazy numbers. He is a threat. Yeah, maybe for a 5x5, maybe he's not going to get enough assists, but he could go up with five steals and five blocks as a small forward. He's super aggressive defensively. He's super aggressive offensively, dunks, alley-oops, putbacks, just charging the rim down. Super aggressive neck tattoos as well, which I think is something that's probably a bit underrated in his intimidation. But he was a guy that at the start of last season, I wanted him to start. But then you think, you put him next to DeMar DeRozan, where's the shooting? Those two guys can't shoot from three. There's no spacing there. And that's a little bit of a problem in terms of his role there. But I agree. If he gets minutes, you're getting steals and blocks at such a ridiculous rate. Insane field goal percentage efficiency. He can score at times. He can get rebounds at times. There is a lot to like about James Johnson, especially those really, really hard to find steals and blocks. And for some reason, if he finds himself in the starting lineup or playing 25 minutes a night, you almost have to make sure he's owned in every league just for his ability to get steals and blocks alone, because they're such hard categories to get, and he can just put them up in really, really big chunks. So he was exactly the guy that I had there, and I appreciate all the Raptors HQ people being big into James Johnson, because I'm big into James Johnson as well. I think that he's such a fun player to watch, and hey, everyone likes to watch fun players.
Absolutely.
Let's talk to DeMar DeRozan. I think he's underrated in fantasy, especially. I know he can't hit threes, and I've had discussions with people before, and they say, I want my wings to hit threes. And my argument is, that's fine, but you just take what you can get from players. Okay, he doesn't hit threes, but you know who hits threes now? Power forwards hit threes. Centers hit threes. Other guys hit threes as well. But you know what other people don't do is go to the line 10 times a game that he can do and hit them at 83% and basically turn that category around for you. Not many guys that you can pick after pick 50 score over 20 points a game, and able to get you four rebounds and four assists a game and a steal a game. He doesn't hit threes. That's fine. That's a detriment to his game, but he does other things really well as well. And I think people really steer clear. I don't want a wing that can't hit threes. And that's fine if you're building an NBA team, but if you're building a fantasy team, it doesn't matter. Get your threes somewhere else. Pick Patrick Patterson later. If you want some threes, pick Ryan Anderson just to get threes in the last pick and get him to hit two threes a game as a power forward. What these guys do, and it was in a discussion I was having about Tyreek Evans. I know Tyreek Evans doesn't hit threes, but he gets six assists a game or seven assists and five rebounds and 18 points, which is still super valuable. You can't just be like, my big man doesn't block shots, therefore I don't want him. Like, you've got to really look at what your team needs in that specific situation. And I think DeRozan is really undervalued because you can't get anyone that late that scores 20 points and hits 83% of their free throws and has such a massive influence on your free throw category. He's currently being drafted at pick 71, which, again, I think that's too low. I think that's probably a round or two too low. I'm a big fan of DeMar DeRozan, even though he can't shoot. I think he's one of the better scorers in the NBA. The injury hampered him significantly last season, and people don't realize that. And he was awesome down the stretch last season. He was putting up numbers that I think a lot of people overlooked. He did struggle early on. That groin injury took him out of action. But for the last month of the season, he was at 24 points a game. He was actually hitting 0.8 threes, which is not bad, but over 5.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 87% from the line on 8.6 attempts. Like, they're significant numbers. He was really hitting his straps. What's your take on DeRozan as a Raptors fan? Do you want him out of there, or do you see the value in him?
In real life, I want him there just because he's one of those guys that wants to be there, and they've been hard to come by for the franchise. I don't necessarily want him at the max. I don't know what the contract negotiations are going to be. I don't think I think that hampers you a bit in terms of what you can offer other players, because I don't think you're going to be a successful team if he's your number one option necessarily. But just because I hate the mid-range, and I'm a big analytics guy, and it drives me nuts to see all the like clank 19 footers. But he can drive well, like you said, the free throw shooting. He's a player that I really like, and I want to see do well. Not even from there are players you like because of their game really fits what you think basketball should be, and maybe DeMar isn't that for me. But I really like the kid. Like I like him a lot. I like him as a person. I like he interviews well, and I like what he brings to the team in terms of someone who can defend, which is something that is often not brought up with him, but he can defend his position quite well. And, you know, he does bring a good scoring. It might not come in the most efficient way, but, you know, he fills it up. He can rebound well for his position. He passes very well for a, he does, you know, a wing player.
Definitely. And it's underrated with his game.
Exactly. And he just gets to the line at such a, like a James Harden-esque rate. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that's really overlooked in his game. And like you said, he just hits it at such a good clip. So he's a player I like. And in terms of fantasy, I could not agree more with you. It's when it comes to the fact that he's underrated, like, right. You made an excellent point. When people talk about the fact that he doesn't hit threes, like talk about his field goal percentage at so many shots per game. Fine. That I'm like, okay, I can see where you're coming from.
Yep.
But then again, your guards, like get centers and power forwards with better field goal percentage and balance it out. But like when it comes to not hitting threes, which is something that I've heard as well, three pointers, I think you might agree with me here. I feel like that's the most replaceable stat on a waiver wire.
Definitely.
It's one of those things where, like, listen, if you want to go out and your draft is over and the you know, you still got guys like Anthony Morrow and
grab Quincy Pondexter.
Marcus Morris, Mike Dunleavy, like guys that hit like a 3.5 to 2 threes a game are just everywhere on that part of the draft, your late round picks. And if you want to plug them in and you have a week where you're not hitting threes, like just go grab one of them and throw them in, Caldwell Pope or, Lou
Jody,
Williams.
Jody Meeks, exactly. Lou Williams is going to put, Jody Meeks is going to hit 1.5 threes in 20 minutes. There's plenty of guys that can hit 1.5 threes in limited minutes. CJ Miles is going to start apparently for the Pacers. He's going to play 30 minutes. He's probably going to hit 2 threes a game. You can use him in that way.
But
you're not getting 84% on 8 attempts from anyone.
No, and you're not going to, you're definitely not going to get a guy that scores 20 points. You're definitely not going to find guys that can give you kind of the four rebound, four assists range. You're not going to find guys that are going to basically carry you in free throw percentage. So I think, you know, people passing on him because of that, especially in the range he's going now, like he's, like you said, he's 80 something in Yahoo, 84.
Is
O rank. That's a steal.
That's really,
there was last year he was going, I feel like it was close to 50, which might have been a slight, you know.
If you look at Basketball Monster, the last month of the season, 8 category value, he was 28th.
Well, there you go. See, you know, he, with that upside and his All-Star season, he finished 56th in 9 cap.
Yep.
And, you know, we haven't seen him get to that like 28th like he did at that period last year for a full season. And of course the injuries come into play last year, and he finished 80th in 9 cap, and he's being drafted like that's who he is. But you got to keep in mind, like, through the injuries and the team kind of, the team just changed. There was a complete identity crisis. The Raptors last year, from the first half of the season, the second half of a season, were, you know, were just two completely different teams. And, you know, he had to kind of find his place in it after leaving. They were doing okay on defense, and he was a big part of that. And then he came back, and it was just like it was a mess. Like you said, from the end of the season, like they were basically winning at about a 500 clip. So I think that he's undervalued in fantasy, and he's like we said, if I'm going to end up with a bunch of Raptors on my team, I could definitely see ending up with Valanciunas, Carroll, and DeRozan on some teams, because maybe not in the drafts I do here in Canada, but, you know, more the ringer drafts and with other writer friends and stuff like that, I can see ending up with them a lot, because they're almost being disrespected when it comes to, you know, what they can achieve and what their ceiling is. So DeRozan is someone I really like. Pardon me?
I've got a soft spot for so many of these guys, and I end up with a lot of them on my teams as well.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite player on this team?
If it's not obvious already, Valanciunas. He's just a guy that I love his upside. I love his he's a little bit goofy, he's fun. He plays so well in international ball. He did, like, in Eurobasket, he made a big impact for Lithuania. And he's one of those guys where he's so young, and he's got such great tools in his tool belt that I feel like he has the potential to be a really great player. Like, we could see a really big breakout. Like, you know, if given the time and the touches, and he irons out his issues on both ends, kind of like the indecisiveness on offense and the rotating on defense, he's a guy that could be, you know, I like to put his ceiling from a fantasy perspective. Like, I don't see why he can't be like in the realm of a DeMarcus Cousins someday. And I mean, I don't mean necessarily like to have the same game and to put up the exact same stats, but I mean, value wise, I don't see why, given the opportunity, why and the development in this game, why he couldn't be a surefire early second round pick in a few years. So he's one of those guys that I'm just rooting for. Like, if I went to the store today and I had to buy one jersey of a current Raptor, it would be his.
The key thing with him is he's young. He is the same age as DeLon Wright, and you just got to let that sink in for a second. Absolutely. But he is young, and he's had 3 seasons in the NBA, but he's still only 23, so he has got a lot of developing to do. Yeah, he's not going to hit his prime for probably another three, four seasons, maybe. There's a lot to, and I really like Valanciunas as well. My favorite player is Kyle Lowry. I really like his aggression at the ball. I like his aggressive rebounding. I like his aggressive manner, demeanor, all that sort of stuff. I'm a big Kyle Lowry fan. But the question that everyone wants to know, Russell, is who's your favorite all-time Raptor? And is it anyone other than Vince Carter?
But before we move on, the point to Kyle Lowry, I would have been really hot. I that was as close to my answer as well. Yeah. For all the reasons that you mentioned, he's an absolute warrior. And I think when Rudy Gay was traded and the team took kind of his demeanor and ran with it, that's when they got really good and you know, went on those runs and established themselves as pretty much a given as a playoff team. And it really came from that. So you know, I like him a lot. To your current question, the favorite Raptor of all time, it's hard not to say Vince Carter, simply because he really opened up basketball to the masses here in Canada, and it was such a big deal that we had this team and we had this player that was like the superstar, this perennial all-star dunk champion. There are so many kids now that are growing up, like, you know, Kevin Durant will say, oh, the Raptors were my favorite team growing up, and that's because of Vince Carter. There are players like Andrew Wiggins and, you know, players growing up and being like, oh yeah, the Raptors, Vince Carter was my favorite player. So it's hard not to feel that. I think going with anything other than that is to kind of deny what he did for basketball here and what he did for the team. Now, he obviously, his exit was very something that Raptors fans do not like to talk about and remember, and he's definitely got a lot of enemies in the six, so to speak.
Yes.
But it's hard not to pick him. And I think my initial instinct, like, you know, when I was a kid, I had the Vince Carter jersey. I've got like little plastic Vince Carter figurines still in my room back at my home I grew up in that, you know, my parents never threw out. So it's hard not to say that. But that said, I really like Chris Bosh.
Okay.
I still really like Chris Bosh, but I liked him a lot as a Raptor, and I think just I identified with him as a goofy, geeky guy. He played the position I played in high school, power forward. He played how I like to play. Like, he was a good rebounder, but he could, you know, stretch it out a bit and shoot a jump shot. And I think I identified with that, and I liked what he brought to the team, and he was a very fiery player. And, you know, when he had those big dreads and he was like screaming all the time, and he was a fun guy. I feel like I'm copying out by picking two of the franchise leaders in just about everything. But, you know, I'd like to be cool and hip and indie and pick a player like an Alvin Williams or, you know, Jamario Moon, what have you, but I mentioned those because those are two players that we talked about recently on the Raptors HQ podcast. So maybe our commenters will have something to say on those guys too. But it's got to be Vince or Chris for me. And I know that's such a mainstream answer, but you know, I value what being a, and maybe you can attest to this, like the growth of basketball in Australia. For me, the growth of basketball in Canada, it's been something I've always been up against in terms of hockey being the popular sport. And I was like the only basketball fan in my high school, and I'm like one of the only basketball fans among my friends now. And it's just like, it's a constant uphill battle. And the fact that for it to be considered relevant and for it to get, you know, shown on highlight shows early enough in the show to that people care. I really love what they did for the team and what, how they brought it to the forefront. I think Team Canada is on the rise because those guys inspired kids in Canada to play basketball. So I got to give them credit for that.
I think that's absolutely why that Canada basketball is on the rise. It's because of Vince and to a lesser extent Bosch. And Bosch had some really, really good seasons. He averaged at least 22 points for five straight seasons. You know, three of those were 20 and 10 seasons. He didn't have the three-point shot when he was in Toronto. He developed that later on in Miami, but he's a guy, a block-a-game guy, a really efficient percentage guy, much like Valanciunas, not quite as good a shooter in terms of his overall field goal percentage, but 22 and 10 is nothing to sneeze at. For so many years in a row, he was the star of this team. Vince Carter, he's the one, he set the franchise up. You know, the franchise, there's a chance it could have gone like the Vancouver franchise went, which it didn't take hold, but because they had Carter there, he set that franchise in stone in Toronto. And like, this is staying here. This is popular because he was awesome. Yeah. His third season in the league, he was the third best fantasy player. He averaged 27.6 points a game, over two threes. Yeah, he gives you four assists, over five rebounds, 1.5 steals, over a block a game. You know, again, really good percentages. He just had some crazy, crazy seasons. He averaged 20 points a game for about 10 years in a row. But I think one of the most impressive things about Vince Carter is what he's done now in his career, how he's completely transformed his game.
Absolutely.
Like from the high flying, you know, attack the rim, splashy sort of dunks to this role player, you know, 3-point spot up shooter, you know, team guy. It's been a real change, and he's extended his career longer than I think probably what you would have expected and what most people would have expected, because they thought, you know, okay, his athleticism's going to fade. He's not going to be able to do the dunks and the highlight plays and the drives and the big blocks or whatever he's going to do. He's not going to be able to do it anymore. But he just said, okay, yeah, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just going to do other things. And I'm going to show that I am actually a basketball player who can do whatever it takes for the team to win, fit whatever role it takes for the team to win. He was a key player for Dallas in their playoffs, you know, when he was last there, 2013-14. He had some big games for them as a 36-year-old man. Like he was key. He was a key sixth man. Now he struggled in Memphis last season. I think a large part due to the foot injury. He might find it hard to come back from that at any stage in his career now. But the fact that he's able to extend his career probably an extra 4 or 5 seasons, I think is testament to his work ethic, his understanding of the game as well. And it's not just based purely on athleticism. You're right, there's a few negative things in his career, but overall, when it all is said and done, he's going to be a legend of the game. He should be a Hall of Famer. I'm pretty sure he will be, but he's going to put up some, you know, he's going to have a huge legacy on this franchise, and it's going to take a really good player to overtake him as the best Raptor in franchise history. So I'm pretty sure that, not necessarily favorite, but in terms of we just looking at best, he's going to be that guy for quite a while. And he was the guy that I had as my favorite player. I didn't want to go with any sort of funky player. Someone did mention, maybe AC Earl was going to be my favorite player, but no. It wasn't ACL. It is definitely Vince Carter. He was electrifying. We all know about the Vince Carter dunk contest. It's something now that I show my son, because he's really into dunk contests at the age of 8, where, you know, that's probably where the dunk contest is targeted. He loves watching them, but he'll go back and watch, you know, Nate Robinson and Spud Webb, and he goes back and watches the Vince Carter one as well, because it was, you know, one of the best displays of athleticism we've ever seen. And he was just a good basketball player. I can't get much more succinct than that. Russell, I think we might be done covering the Raptors. Have you got anything else you want to add?
No, we were pretty thorough, I think we were. Covered the team through and through. No, it's good. I mean, one thing I will say is, you were mentioning about your watching dunk contests with your son. It's something I hadn't thought about. I've got an 8.5-month old. He's my first. And the concept of when I'll eventually be able to, like, you know, bring him through basketball history. I mean, maybe I'll have no interest in it. Fine. But I'm really excited about the opportunity to share that type of stuff. I think now about getting nostalgic and showing the dunk contest and stuff. It's funny you mentioned it's kind of like geared towards 8-year-olds. So, you know.
He started watching when he was about three.
Yeah, it should work there. Oh, yeah. But then again, I guess I'm a perpetual 8-year-old, because I still get really excited about it. It's one of those things where I think that it's dropped off considerably, but yeah. It's still one of those things I really look forward to. And honestly, with with All-Star Weekend coming to Toronto, I kind of said to myself, I think when I was 10 years old or, you know, 11, 12, I said that if an All-Star game ever comes to Toronto, I'm going to be there. So, and I don't live in Toronto proper. I live in Montreal. So we're talking about a, you know, a 6 or 7 hour drive, depending on your stops. But I'm going. If I can get there and get in the building just to be there, I'm going to go. So I'm really excited about it coming to Toronto, and yeah, it'll be fun.
That should be good, man. That's exciting times getting out to that. So I do hope you manage to get yourself across there and get down to that. Now let's remind everybody, A, where they can find you on Twitter, and B, where they can find your work. So we've mentioned the Raptors HQ podcast. Just give a plug to all the other stuff you're doing and any sort of articles or podcasts you've got coming out.
Okay, great. We've got, you can get me on Twitter at Rusty Pedalbike, a little bit of a joke on my name, spelled like the words, not my name itself. So RustyPedalbike. That was actually a nickname I had as a child. So I appropriated that and I took it back. They can find me on numberfire.com. That's where I do most of my writing. I'm one of the main basketball writers there. So, I'm releasing 3 or 4 things a week. Yesterday I had something on the remaining viable free agents, which became outdated like an hour after it posted because, Luc Mbah-Moute, signed a camp deal with the Clippers just after I said he was one of the better players still available. It really pained me as well because I talked about, Carlos Boozer being one of the best players still available.
That's where we're at in free agencies.
An idea of where we're at in free agency. Exactly. Talk a little bit about Anthony Bennett, if you want your Canadian content, and how he might be people like to bring him up as the worst number one pick of all time. And, you know, he might be in the running, but I think there's someone that's worse, so they can check that out. And just stuff coming out every week there. Raptors HQ, should be, ramping stuff up over there, but we've got a new podcast. We're about 2 episodes in. So I'll promote that. Posts coming up there once the season gets going and the preseason. They're playing a preseason game actually here in Montreal. They do a Canadian tour.
Okay.
Now the Raptors, they're playing 4 games across Canada. The one in Montreal I'll be covering. I'll be there at the game and I'll be writing a bit about it, about the experience. So that, you know, people can look to that. I've got some other things in the burner, but if they don't come to light, then I don't want to say it and then not write it. But other than that, we mentioned the Stretch Zero. It's something that's been kind of dormant for a little while now, but it's something that Brian Mears and I started, and another writer for Numberfire, also involved with Fantasy Labs, Roto Academy. Great guy overall, a Hornets guy. He and I have this thing, Stretch Zero. It's basically just a site where if we have something we want to write that doesn't fit where we write, if we can do it there. Or we've mostly been using it as a place to podcast, but that fell off too when my son was born last year, but we might look to get that going again. So stretchzero.com, raptorshq.com, numberfire.com. Check it all out.
So Russell is all over the place, so make sure you are checking out that stuff. And check out the Raptors HQ podcast and go and leave a review in your iTunes store. And do the same for this podcast, of course. You're obviously listening to it, but just head across and give me 5 minutes of your time. Not even 3 minutes. Just leave a review. 5 stars. Good. That's all you need to write. Just write, good show, good podcast. 5 stars. That's all I ask from you. Make it funny. Do a joke, bag me, whatever it is, but I just appreciate you getting out there and leaving that review. And I'm sure Russell would appreciate the same for the Raptors HQ podcast. If you could go out there, subscribe to it and leave a review. Make sure you're doing that for all the other Hardwood Paroxysm podcasts and checking out the content that we've got going over on Hardwood Paroxysm. And of course at Basketball Monster, where I'll have some punt building head-to-head strategy guides coming out in the coming weeks. You'll see, I've got 2 of them written already. Got a few more of them coming. You'll see some how-to sort of guides for building punt-based lineups in head-to-head leagues. So make sure you're ready to see that if you are a member of Basketball Monster. And if you're not, why not? You should be. Go and sign up over there. Russell, thank you for coming on. It was a very enlightening chat about the Raptors.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. I had a lot of fun.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.